Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this September the 18th on the West Coast, now already September the 19th on the East Coast in the Central Time Zones and across the Atlantic Ocean into points beyond. I'd like to welcome anyone who's listening to the show tonight, either on Wind Talkers Radio Network or Blog Talk Radio.com, or both, actually. And I want to thank you for carrying tonight's show. Before we bring tonight's guest, I just want to give the listening audience an update on the situation surrounding my publisher, editor at the Idaho Observer, Don Harkins. He is making progress, let's put it that way. He opted out of the allopathic medical community, and in fact I'm fairly certain, and so is he and everyone else near to him, that if he had remained in there, he'd already be dead. He's elsewhere, and he's receiving a lot of love and a lot of care, and he's making some very positive progress, but prayer is necessary. No one is going to just rest on the laurels of one or two requests. We ask you over and over again to pray. So we appreciate any prayers to Don Harkins and his wife, Ingrid Castle, and, you know, surround their home, their property with peace and love and light, and the cockroaches will go away. There'll be a point in the future, I guarantee you, where I will be able to discuss what occurred to Don Harkins, and you will be amazed. It seems like many of the attacks that we were undergoing seemed to take a break over the weekend, or, you know, at the start of the weekend, I should say. It's been a little quieter today. But people seem to want to keep going back into these experience loops. You know, we have sound loops, and we have time loops, and we have fruit loops. I think a lot of people are still in the fruit loops stage with their consciousness, and they keep going back to these same arguments. You know, we move through some energy, but no, I got to go back. I have to have some of that drama in my life. I have to show everybody that I know the story, and this time, you know, I'm going to get my point out there, and we keep retracing our steps. And many of the steps have been corruptly laid out for us to follow, so they don't really have a destination. Their purpose is just to divide and conquer, and that's what propaganda is about. Had a few propaganda moments today. That might come up sometime during the show. We all have, if you've been paying attention to what's been going on in Washington, D.C. But nevertheless, we're looking at these talks that Jim Murray and I have been doing off and on over the last 9 months, 10 months maybe even longer, because I think we started this in October or November of 2008. And we did many months in a row, week after week, of some material related on the topic of a higher consciousness, developing a higher consciousness and developing an awareness and a responsibility. And a lot of people get the message, but they don't do anything about it. They don't take action. And I've heard some other talk show hosts recently talk about that. Drew Raines is a perfect example. On his second hour of his broadcast yesterday, he went into somewhat of a rant, and it made sense. And what gets me is that all the listeners are in the chat room, and they're talking about things that are nothing, have nothing to do with what's going on in the show. Now, I sound like I'm being overly critical. I guess people can do whatever they want in a chat room. But then they ask these questions that have already been answered during the show. So, now, my listening audience listens to what I say, and the email that I get, the comments that they make, and their own research reflects that they have a common interest. But not everyone who's listening to the show is a researcher or even a truth seeker. Some people are just trying to find some way to be entertained or hear something weird that they can share when they get into work and stand by the coffee machine at 9:30 in the morning with their co-workers. This is about life, folks. This is about humanity and what may not be a very long future. Or the Earth, the survival of this planet Earth. And whether or not you are going to even play a conscious role in what's going to happen now or even after it happens, during the happening and after it happens. So we're going to talk about that in a broad sense. And tonight's guest, Jim Murray, has returned just for that purpose. And he is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher. And he's our resident science advisor. So welcome back to Evident Footprints, Jim. How are you?
I'm fine, Don. Thank you for that intro. How are you this evening?
Oh, I could be better. You know, I could be better, but I could be worse, too. So I guess the proper answer is, you know, somewhere in the middle.
Okay, we'll buy that. Well, I was very interested in the way you set that introduction up. Because it's true, we have been laboring for months now to try and give people some insights into various ways of elevating their consciousness, taking action to break out of the matrix, and also take responsibility for their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for all intents and purposes, we probably have been doing a reasonably good job from the feedback we've been receiving. Some people seem to understand. But it occurred to me last week, while I was thinking about tonight's show, that perhaps we are being too persistent on too high a level of expectation with regard to this subject. Not that we shouldn't do that, but my reasoning was that it's one of those situations where if somebody hasn't experienced something, it's very difficult to illuminate them with respect to a totally alien experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the many people who have never had a burst of higher consciousness or the opening of a portal to a higher realm, naturally these words may sound interesting, but they don't necessarily hit home.
Yeah.
So it occurred to me that what we might do to make an impression is to go in the other direction. And in order to achieve that, I put together a list of some really amazing things that are worth talking about tonight, I think. And the sole purpose is to show the opposite effect of a really dumbed-down individual. And
oh, we're going to be talking about politics then.
Well, actually, it's funny that you should say that, because some of my opening comments do involve politicians.
Okay.
I won't be mentioning any names, of course, but people can
okay, continue. Continue. I hope I haven't ruined your train of thought. But
No, you know, it's quite all right. But the reason for doing this, of course, is to create contrast. You know, we've been talking about these aspirations for higher consciousness now for months. And I thought it might be an interesting but opposite approach to demonstrate what constitutes low consciousness so people can gauge for themselves where they stand. And there's a secondary purpose in part of this presentation, too, and that is that I'm hopeful that it will shed a little bit of light on the kind of pinheads that we have running the country. I say that deliberately because it is really a deplorable state of affairs. And the kind of things that I'm going to report in the few little incidents that I managed to locate is, of course, nothing compared with what's going on in the hallowed halls of the Capitol and the White House. But it will give us an inkling of the kind of individuals that must reside there and where their level of consciousness is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jim, I'm going to allow you to have the floor or the mic, whichever you prefer. And I have a question in my mind that I think can bring this conversation down even lower, to a lower vibration, may I interrupt?
Well, of course, it's your show.
Well, I know that's what you want to do is to get that low vibration out there. So if I see the opportunity, I may have a question or a brief comment.
Yeah, you're
supposed to
welcome.
Laugh. Wondering when that will occur. Okay.
Well, you're certainly welcome to interject whatever you like, Don.
What would you call this? Would you possibly describe it as the dichotomy of the conscious individual?
How about polarities of consciousness?
Okay, polarities of consciousness. Okay, then you have to define those. So I'm going to leave you to the mic, at least. Whether you take the floor or not is your business.
Well, I'm certainly not going to float around, so we'll have the mic on the floor. How's that?
All right.
Basically, what I mean by polarities of consciousness, folks, is that we've been talking about higher levels of consciousness, intuitive actions, God consciousness, aspirations for higher truths and things of that sort. And those are definitely on the positive end of the scale. The opposite end of the scale, well, the negative polarity, of course, is the dim-witted behavior that's barely defined as human activity, no spirituality in anything that's being done, just lumbering through life with a very dim glowing bulb. And it certainly constitutes the opposite of what we've been trying to inspire you towards. Now, I was searching around on the internet for things of interest in this direction, and I came across a really amazing set of reports, let's call them, that were issued by a ticket agent that serves the politicians primarily in the Washington D.C. area. And I read this stuff with utter amazement, and I'm hoping that some of the impact that I felt will rub off on you folks when I read these things.
Yeah, I'm familiar with this, so I'm not going to say anything about it. You just read it.
Okay, and then I have a follow-up one, which is even more amazing, but we'll start with this. And I'm going to be reading the words of this ticket agent, so when I say I, it's not going to be me. It's going to be the gentleman who wrote this up in the first place. I had a New Hampshire congresswoman ask for an aisle seat so that her hair wouldn't be messed up by the wind from the window on the airplane. Now, that's an amazing observation. And this is a congresswoman that made that remark. The next one is also interesting. I got a call from a Kansas congressman's staff member who wanted to go to Cape Town. I started to explain the length of the flight and the passport information, and then he interrupted me with, "I'm not trying to make you look stupid, but Cape Town is in Massachusetts." Without trying to make him look stupid, I calmly explained, "No, sir, Cape Town is in South Africa. Cape Cod is in Massachusetts." The only response he rendered was hanging up the phone. A senior Vermont congressman called, furious, about a Florida package that I had prepared for him. I asked what was wrong with the vacation in Orlando. He said he was expecting an ocean view room. I tried to explain that that wasn't possible since Orlando is in the middle of the state. He replied, "Don't lie to me. I've studied the map, and Florida is a very thin state." These are the people that are running our nation, folks.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call from a lawmaker's wife who asked, "Is it possible to see England from Canada?" I said, "No." She said, "But they look so close on the map." An aide for a cabinet member once called and asked if he could rent a car in Dallas. I pulled up the reservation and noticed that he only had an hour layover in Dallas. When I asked him why he wanted to rent a car, he said, "Oh, I've heard that the Dallas airport is enormous and we'll need a car to drive between gates to save time." An Illinois congresswoman called last week. She needed to know how it was possible that her flight from Detroit, which left at 8:30 a.m., could get to Chicago at 8:33 a.m. I explained that Michigan was an hour ahead of Illinois, but she could not fathom the concept of time zones. Finally, I told her the plane went really fast. "Oh," says she, and she bought that idea. A New York lawmaker called and asked, "Do airplanes put physical descriptions of the passengers on their bag so that, do airlines put physical descriptions of passengers on the bag so that they know who the luggage belongs to?" I said, "No, why do you ask?" "Well," he responded, "when I checked in, the airline put a tag on my luggage that said FAT, and I am overweight. I think that's very rude." After putting him on hold for a minute, I looked into the matter, And I died laughing. I came back and explained the city code for Fresno, California is FAT, which means Fresno Air Terminal, and the airline was just putting a designation tag on his luggage. A senator's aide called to inquire about a trip to Hawaii. After going over all the costs involved, she asked, "Wouldn't it be cheaper to fly to California and then take the train to Hawaii?" I really kind of find that interesting because it's been a long time since we had submarine trains, you know. I just got off the phone with a freshman congressman from Alaska who asked, "How do I know which plane to get on?" I asked him what exactly he meant, and he replied, "I was told my flight number is 823, but none of these planes have numbers painted on them." Another senator called and said, "I need to fly to Pepsi-Cola, Florida. Do I have to get on one of those little computer planes?" I asked if she meant to fly to Pensacola, Florida, on a commuter plane. She replied, "Yeah, whatever, smarty." The No, not only do we vote them in, but we pay them some exorbitant amount of money for this type of rot.
Now, you got this out of the Congressional Record?
No, actually, I didn't, but that's probably where it belongs.
Okay, please continue. You know, this is the other one, it sounds like, now. Or are you reading from the same one?
No, I've still got another half page on this one, and
we
chat about that before I move on to the other one, because the other one is even lower in frequency. A senator called and had a question about the documents she needed to fly to China. After a lengthy discussion about passports, I reminded her that she would need a visa. Oh, no, I don't. I've been to China many times, and I never had to use one of those. I double-checked, and sure enough, she required a visa to visit that country. When I told her this, she said, look, I've been to China 4 times now, and every time they have accepted my American Express. A New Jersey congressman, that strikes near to home, called to make reservations. I want to go from Chicago to Rhino, New York. I was at a loss for words. Finally, I said, are you sure that's the name of the town? Yes, I'm sure. What flights do you have? After some additional searching, I came back and I said, I'm sorry, sir. I've looked up every airport code in the country, and I cannot find one for a Rhino, New York, or a Rhino anywhere. The man retorted, oh, don't be silly. Everyone knows where it is. Check your map. So I scurried to the map of the state of New York, and finally I offered a possible explanation. You don't mean Buffalo by any chance, do you? His reply was, oh, whatever. I knew it was a big animal. Now, that's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah. Now, that's just a travel agent talking to people that work in the government or work as associates.
Well, some of them were actual congresspeople, and that's not too encouraging. And others were aides, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few lawyers thrown in there for good measure, as you might expect.
Now, I think the guy that took the time to write all that should have at least disclosed who the politicians were.
Oh, he did. I just skipped over the names because I thought maybe it wasn't a good idea to do that.
Well, you're just quoting what he wrote, you know, but
we could
guess. We could leave that in the imagination of the listening audience, who that might be.
Especially if they turn out to be in their district, you know, it might make things interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, now this other one you're saying is of even a lower consciousness. Are these things that come from all over the country and from different sources, or are we talking about the travel agent?
No, these are just... little things which are reported anecdotally from all over the place, but they give you an idea of the dimness of the minds of some people. And I realize that, thank God, most people are not in this at this level of development or whatever you want to call it. But for the sake of establishing a really meaningful contrast, I thought that it would be worthwhile to read these. There's only about 6 or 8 of them. But some of them are pretty amazing. Actually, the first one is pretty astonishing in its own right. It just says, when his .38 caliber revolver failed to fire at his intended victim during a holdup in Long Beach, California, would-be robber James Elliott did something that can only inspire wonder. He peered down the barrel and pulled the trigger again. This time, it worked just fine. Now, I admit he saved the taxpayers and everybody a lot of money with that interesting little gesture, but doesn't say too much for his brightness.
No.
The chef at a plush hotel lost a finger in a meat-cutting machine and immediately submitted a claim to his insurance company. The company, expecting negligence, sent out one of its men to investigate the matter personally. He tried the machine and also lost a finger. Whereupon the chef's claim was immediately approved. Now, isn't that touching?
Yeah. It's amazing. I'm sure you have a few more there.
Oh, yes, I do. I have a few more. If nothing else, you know, it allows for a laugh on the show, which is probably good once in a while. A man who shoveled snow for an hour to clear a space for his car during a blizzard in Chicago returned with his vehicle to find that a woman had taken the spot. Understandably, he shot her. Now, you know, that says quite a bit. It's worth contemplating.
I have one to share, if I can.
I'm going to
paraphrase this news article. This happened in Southern California a few years ago. This young lady had gone grocery shopping, and she returned to her car and put her groceries in the back seat, started her car up, and was listening to the radio, waiting for the car to warm up and to get the air conditioning ready to turn on. And something happened, and the man that was in the store actually saw her in this store, was parked next to her, and when he was putting the things in his car, he looked over at her, and she had both of her hands clasped on the back of her head. And she's sitting there with her seatbelt on, not moving. He went over to the door. The window was rolled up, so he yelled, you know, "Is everything okay, ma'am?" And she didn't move. She didn't say anything. And he tapped on the window, and she just rolled her eyes in his direction, but she still wouldn't turn her head. She kept her hands cupped on the back of her head. And he yelled a little bit louder, and he said, "What happened to you?" And she said, "I've been shot, and I'm holding my brains in." She was shot in the back of the head. Well, the guy called the fire department and the police, and they came down, and they got the door unlocked. Evidently, when she put her seatbelt on, it locked all the doors, and she wasn't about to move to let anybody in. So they got into the car with the Slim Jim, and they asked her to let go of the back of her head, and she said, "I can't. I'm holding my brains in. I've been shot in the back of the head." Well, they didn't see any blood. What they saw on the back seat was one of these muffin tins, the cylindrical kind, and it was so hot in that car when she put that stuff in there that literally the silver cap on the end of the tube flew off, and all that dough hit her in the back of the head. Well, it made a loud bang, but it was just dough. And then at the end of the story, it said, "Oh, by the way, she was blonde." So, now, this is true. This is a true event that was in a Southern California newspaper. I think it hit the L.A. Times and the Orange County Register.
You know, they're all true, supposedly. The real question is, how do you explain them? I mean, you're going to tell me that someone shot in the back of the head wouldn't notice something other than a loud popping sound in the car?
Well, this is the result of our fine educational system that they tell us we have, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the wonderful nurturing and informative news that we have.
Yeah, well, you know, you interjected that little dealy there. The other thing worthwhile to talk about for a second is the big demonstration in Washington, which you brought up during your opening remarks. And I read in several reports that there were a few hundred people, a few thousand people. Actually, there was close to a million or more people. And, you know, there have been photographs of that released subsequently. But why is it that our media, which we rely on so steadfastly, doesn't report the truth? You don't have to be overly bright to know the difference between a million people and 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm. The figures coming out of Washington from the people who were there said that they estimated there were 2.5 million people. So we're already talking about 150% more than the figure that you named.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And I witnessed something this evening, all of 15 seconds, this clown on CNN. This guy looks like he should quit his journalism job and go to Walmart and sell trench coats. And I don't even think they have trench coats there, but if they do, they must have a trench coat salesman. If they don't, this guy would be perfect for that. He was slamming Bill O'Reilly of Fox News because CNN didn't cover the story. Their idea of covering the story was having a camera mounted on a permanent mount that they could always film something happening there in the Washington Mall. And it showed... it showed a lot more than 2,000 people standing in the road, but the guy still gave out that number while you're looking at the picture. And then proceeded to say, we did cover it, Bill O'Reilly. You lie. You know, and he was talking about the you lie statement that came out during that address before Congress that Joe Wilson blurted out.
Yeah, I'm familiar with
it. You know, it was pure propaganda. Okay, and I mean, they're talking about trying to hoodwink the girl that got hit in the back of the head with the dough, you know. They're trying to reach her with this news. That character, that personality type, that lack of intelligence. And it was a totally absurd argument, and this guy thought he was really cool. He thought he had really, really socked it to Bill O'Reilly. And I don't even know this clown's name, to tell you the truth. But I think I've seen him on NBC at one time or another. Or maybe he's just a clone of one of those people. But anyway, go ahead, Jim.
Well, okay. Let me see where I was here. Oh. After stopping for drinks during working hours, a bus driver found that 20 mental patients he was supposed to be transporting to a mental facility had escaped. Not wanting to admit his incompetence, the driver went to a nearby bus stop and offered everyone waiting there a free ride. He then delivered those passengers to the mental hospital, telling the staff that the patients were all very excitable and prone to bizarre fantasies. This deception was not discovered for 3 days.
That's hilarious.
I find that rather amusing, but it's typical. Here's one for you. An American teenager was in the hospital recovering from a serious head wound received from an oncoming train. When asked how he received the injuries, the lad told the police that he was simply trying to see how close he could get his head to a moving train before he was hit. You know, well, the IQ there is probably about 0.4. A man walked into a Louisiana Circle K, put a $20 bill on the counter, and asked for change. When the clerk opened the cash drawer, the man pulled out a gun and asked for all the cash in the register. The clerk promptly responded. The man took the cash from the clerk and fled, leaving the $20 bill on the counter. The total amount of cash he got from the drawer was $15. So if someone points a gun at you and gives you money, has a crime been committed? Oh, my God. It seems that an Arkansas guy wanted a beer pretty badly. He decided that he would just throw a cinder block through the liquor store window, grab some booze, and run. So he lifted the cinder block and heaved it over his head at the window. The cinder block bounced back and hit the would-be thief in the head, knocking him unconscious. The liquor store window was made of plexiglass, and the whole event was caught on videotape. Here's one for you. A female shopper exited a New York convenience store, and a man grabbed her purse and ran. The clerk called 911 immediately, and the woman was able to give him a detailed description of the snatcher. Within minutes, the police apprehended the snatcher. They put him in the car and drove him back to the scene of the crime. The thief was then taken out of the car and told to stand there for a positive ID. To which he replied, "Yes, officer, that's her. That's the woman I stole the purse from." Talk about being cooperative, you know.
Mm-hmm.
An Ann Arbor News crime column reported that a man walked into a Burger King in Ypsilanti, Michigan at 5 a.m., flashed a gun, and demanded cash. The clerk turned him down because he said he couldn't open the cash register without a food order. Whereupon, the man ordered onion rings. The clerk said, "I'm sorry, but they are not available during breakfast hours." Frustrated, the thief simply walked away. There's one more here that's worth reading. When a man attempted to siphon gasoline from a motorhome parked on a Seattle street, he got much more than he had bargained for. Police arrived at the scene to find a very sick man curled up on the concrete next to the motorhome. A police spokesman said that the man had attempted stealing gasoline by using a siphoning hose into the gas tank, but had inadvertently put it in the sewage tank by mistake.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, I realize that that's a very strict departure from the things we normally talk about, but it just goes to show you that our world is really littered with some amazing characters that occupy the lower echelon of the consciousness domain. And unfortunately, a goodly number of them are elected leaders.
Yes. Now, you know, you reminded me of a story that I have to share. And this was in the realm of my experience because I knew three of the people who were involved in this thing. And this made major national news. Basically, about 12 years ago, I'm going to say. Not that long. Let's say 9-10 years ago. There's a particular couple, a girl that just graduated from high school in Ohio, and her boyfriend, and he decides that he's going to sort of manage her her career. She can sing a little bit. She was a cheerleader. But he said to make it really big in music, you know, you have to have a big chest. So I think you should consider getting some implants. And, you know, we'll find a way to get the money. Well, what the guy did is used the girl's mother's credit card. Now, I don't recall if they plotted together in using it or he was somehow able to obtain it while he was at her house. But they charged some $7,000 or $8,000 for this augmentation procedure that she had done. And these were silicone implants. And then it made quite a furor around the country because the woman filed charges against the boyfriend for having stolen the credit card and then used it for this operation that changed her daughter. You know, she was pretty upset about the whole thing. They somehow got a plea bargain agreement to where they were going to pay back the money right away. And that was the reason for the TV appearances now. So another friend of mine got them booked on the Jenny Jones show in Chicago, which was an afternoon talk show, very much like some of the other ones. Very similar to Jerry Springer, actually. And if you've ever seen that show, you know how outside the box it can be with everybody still inside the box. So she was there sitting on the set, and she was the featured guest on the show, which they were talking about these women that got these procedures done, and they had a lot of negative side effects that occurred. The silicone were being replaced with, a different type with salt water in it. And so Jenny Jones is, you know, first bringing up the fact that this girl became famous because her boyfriend used the mother's credit card to pay for the surgery, and it was a major theft. And what, you know, she's asking, what would compel you to do this? And she said, well, my boyfriend felt that I would be more successful, you know, if I was more attractive, and so that's why I did it. And she says, well, you got the silicone implants. She said, those are the ones that all the doctors are telling the women they've got to have removed. Because if those break, inside your body, that it can kill you. And she said, did your doctor say anything about that before he put these silicone implants in there? And, she said, yeah, we talked about it. And he said it would be okay as long as I was careful. And she said, careful. And she said, you know, this is dangerous if these break. Did he tell you what it's going to take to break those silicone implants that you have inside your body? And she said, yeah, it's going to take a head-on collision. Now, she meant car, you know, but the audience didn't take it that way. It's the same thing, Jim. There are countless stories of dumb criminals that have stolen things and actually lost money in the process, especially when they rob stores. What is that telling you, okay, about the consciousness? What is at the root of that result?
Well, you know, it's a difficult question to answer because I have a very good imagination, but one of the things that's very difficult for someone to do is to imagine something that they haven't experienced. And I just can't imagine myself being down that in that area of mental functioning. But objectively speaking, it seems to me that it's a pretty good indication that the bell curve the statistical analysis of consciousness presented in a bell curve is not one of these curves that has, you know, steep slopes to it and a high central pinnacle representing whoever resides at the highest consciousness. It seems to me that it's a very flat curve, and that there are only, you know, a very small amount of people in the middle that rise above the capacity of the masses, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And that indicates to me a lot of things. First of all, the educational system is definitely to blame, at least in some respect. The conditions of the deteriorating family environment have a very pronounced effect on development. This is something that's very well known. People not interested in anything in particular don't accelerate towards a goal. They just sort of flounder around and fester. And there's an awful lot of that going on. And the last thing is one thing we've been harping on for months, and that's responsibility. You know, people have to take responsibility for their own lives, even if they are unfortunate enough to come from a troubled family or an improper background or are lacking in education. There's nothing that says that they can't, you know, rely on their intestinal fortitude a little bit and lift themselves up by their own bootstraps. So I guess that none of those things are happening. And that in its own right seems to suggest that people are waiting for something to happen. Either they're looking for leadership or they're expecting something for nothing. Or they have a really, really dumbed down appreciation for how the world works. Or all of the above.
Yeah, the thing I notice, and I hear this from a lot of talk show hosts, especially the ones in the patriot movements, or in the health movement as well. There seems to be this understanding that this stuff goes on, meaning, you know, there are things that are wrong. And in many cases, you can show people what it is. I mean, we kind of did that with our talk. But you were saying that we may have erred in not lowering the consciousness enough, or at least talking about that so we can possibly bring some people up with that. I mean, why else would we share this? Certainly this is a trip back into the matrix for those that have escaped it to some extent. But your point is well taken too, that everybody seems to be waiting for somebody else to make the first move while they absorb themselves or bathe themselves in fear and fear-mongering and bickering back and forth over who's right and who's wrong, and they're just reacting to everything, but they're not really contributing to it in many cases. Now, that's not everybody. You know, we get emails from people, suggestions. They send us documents. They call into the show and give us some feedback on how this information is impacting them. But the average individual are so numerous that, you know, everyone sees the out of balance nature of everything. You were talking about the polarities, you know. There certainly seems to be a lot more energy and matter attracted to the magnetic field of the negative pole.
Well, I hope that's not true. I saw those pictures that you were talking about taken from the rooftop camera of the installation there in Washington that looked right up the main street there and then out onto the mall, mm-hmm. toward the Capitol building. and there was definitely an ocean of people there. And let's assume that the numbers are correct and that it was approaching 2.5 million or whatever altogether. At least that shows that you have 2.5 million people that know what's going on, or they wouldn't have been there. Now, it's true they're griping about a lot of different things, and they don't all understand the intricacies of the fiat money system, how crooked the government really is, and all these other things. But it's a beginning. And so I take that as a good sign, especially when you consider that everybody who feels that way obviously didn't pack up and go to Washington. So I say at least that there's hope in the situation. And the fact that, you know, people have gotten to the point where they're ticked off enough to make that demonstration tells me that quite a few people are waking up. And so looking on the positive side of things, even though there's a lot of dunderheads around, you have to remember there always were. Only 6% of the 13 original colonists took an active role in the revolution against England. And so it just goes to show you that even back then you had people that preferred to sit on the fence. And of course there were loyalists to the crown as well. But the revolution was accomplished by a very small number of people who were single-minded and wanted to do the right thing. So when you add all of that up and you realize that human nature hasn't changed very much, what's interesting, of course, is that the percentages are much larger. I don't remember how many people there were in the 13 original colonies, but it wasn't that many. Now we've got 300 million people in this country, and, you know, a few percent of that is a very big number.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Well, the, you know, what is very apparent, and I wonder how far down into this lower level of consciousness this awareness goes, Jim. I think I'd like to see you take a stab at that. In other words, how many of the people that watch this on the news, let's say like on CNN, this report that I described, and understand that the picture and what they're saying don't match. I mean, that's how propaganda works. They show you a picture, and they tell you what the picture means.
I'm very perplexed by that mechanism, you know. I really am. I wish I knew a lot more about the intricacies of the human mind, but it's not only propaganda, it's downright programming, because it's almost like a form of hypnosis. You know, you show somebody a goat, and under hypnosis you tell him it's a chicken. He certainly can see the goat, but for some reason the input stimulus from his eyes is ignored, and the suggestion to the brain is stronger. So he treats it like it's a chicken. Well, that's exactly what you're describing. You know, any idiot can tell that there were more than 1,000 people there just by looking at the picture. So even if somebody says a few thousand people, well, a few thousand people is a drop in the bucket next to 2.5 million people.
Yeah, the average high school gymnasium holds 4,000 people in the bleachers. You know, we're talking about just two medium-sized opposing bleachers, something a little bit larger than what you'd see on a sandlot baseball field. Okay, you can get quite a large number of people in one of those gymnasiums. Now, imagine how many buildings 400,000 people would fill up, or 2 million. It's obvious that the streets are overflowing there. And those people didn't trash the place. Did you see any pictures of the post-inauguration?
Yeah, yeah, it was a pigsty. And then they showed the aftermath of this particular gathering, and it was immaculate. So, I mean, even the quality of the individuals involved are radically different.
Yeah.
It's almost like the inauguration was attended, you know, with the same enthusiasm as some kind of feeding frenzy, you know,
yeah.
or what's the other herd, you know, the reaction was more of a herd type reaction. Whereas the caliber of people attending this other gathering was significantly higher. It's very interesting. And
well,
by the way, there was some fascinating signs displayed too, I might add.
Yes, there were. I read some on my show last night and with Drew Raines, and there were some good ones. There were some very sharp, well thought out statements being made, and that's the whole point in these things. You know, they weren't there to cause division. They were there to bring the people together, and it could be seen from everything they left in their wake, which was order. You know, the statement that you just made is confirmed by the order that they left when they left. And that's the moment CNN went in to interview a couple of people when everybody was gone. You know, and like we don't see what's going on with this. And I didn't watch that that whole event. You know, I watched a portion to see what their rap was going to be on it, and I was making a comparison to what I was seeing on the internet. One report said, well, there were about 60,000 people there. I'll give them that, you know. It's as much a lie as just 2,000. And what's the point of not honoring it? Well, because these people are telling the truth. And they don't want the truth to come out on the propaganda media. They want the people dumbed down. Oh, but they say things like, well, we have to give the schools more money. That's because they've come up with ways to steal the money from the schools. That's how they get them into the derivatives and the hedge funds. Trust me on that one. Okay, so when they're ordering things in the schools, they can't pay the local businesses they're buying these things from on purchase orders. So they take stimulus money and illegally apply it so they don't have to cover for what they've stolen. This is going on in schools. It's going on in the government. It's going on in the banks. It's going on everywhere. And that doesn't seem to register with most people. Well, they said the stock market's having a problem. Maybe we should hold on to our stocks a little bit and see if it rebounds. They're not listening to the message. You know, because that hollow box that glows with that deep voice is hypnotizing them into just sitting around and not caring about anything. Not taking responsibility is an understatement. Go ahead, Jim. I had to rant a little bit there for a moment.
Well, I have no problem with that. I mean, after all, your views are as important as mine, if not more so, but the key issue here is the word you just used, is hypnotism, you know? It almost is a form of hypnotism, the way TV affects some people. And that is one of the most successful medias of propaganda that's ever existed. And it's amazing the effect that it has on some people's minds. You know, ever since you and I started doing this on a regular basis, I've been looking very carefully at some of the ads on TVs. And the most astounding ones are the medical ones. They're just almost beyond comprehension that they can even get away with what they're doing.
Yes.
Because you see a drug being advertised And a lot of these new drugs are anti, psychotic drugs and, you know, sleeping drugs and all these kind of things, which are probably very dangerous, actually, because it's one thing to adjust the pH, you know, in your stomach, and it's another thing to tamper with the chemistry of the brain. But they don't seem to be too concerned about that. As long as you pay money for them, they'll give you anything. But the thing that's really amazing are the warnings. If you have even a smattering of common sense and a little bit of understanding of general medicine, it's just unbelievable, the stuff that they report verbally on the tube concerning the potential side effects. Now, what's interesting, and some of them, they come right out and say, can cause death.
You know? Yeah, there's, and if you've died, I like the legal ads that come on where they say, if you or a loved one has gotten sick or died from taking yeah. this medicine. Well, yeah, you know, it was me. I died. Don't know about my loved ones, but I mean, listen to the language that they're using there. It doesn't even make any sense. It doesn't matter if it makes any sense. They do this over and over again. It's actually their intention to put it at that low level.
Yeah, and the other thing that I noticed too, have you ever met people that are really psychotic? One of the things that's interesting about them is that they display multiple emotions simultaneously. And they do it usually through their face. So, like, for instance, a person could have a real genuine smile on their mouth, and in their eyes you see pure hatred. And the contrast is very, very striking. And I've been exposed to some mental patients under various conditions and noticed this, and it can be very upsetting to a fairly normal individual to see the transmission of two separate signals simultaneously, because in your gut you know without any doubt there's something wrong with that person.
Oh, yeah. I see this. There's a actually two channels. They're sister channels out of Washington, D.C. They're called C-SPAN. I see those phenomena all the time.
Well, you see that a lot on the faces of some of the people that are interviewed on some of these political shows.
Yeah.
I notice it a lot. But the reason I brought it up was because something very similar is actually being done on those medical commercials, because if you listen to the words, now you know that by law they're supposed to tell you about potential side effects, and they do, but if you listen to the timing of the words, you know, when they say, oh, can cause liver failure, you know, give you pustules, it'll give you diarrhea, it'll give you stomach cramps, it can even kill you, they're listing all these different things that they're talking about. But while that's being transmitted verbally, the people in the picture are either making love, they're walking down a country road, you know,
they're
sitting on the couch, they're dancing, they're having a beautiful meal with their family. And so it's like a dichotomy of opposite stimuli. And I think that the reason that they do that is because two opposing stimuli paralyzes the analytical center of the brain.
Well, yeah, and in the target audience, they know that they'll be looking at the pictures and not listening to a word that's said, which is why they use the images and the music, is to entrain the attention on what is to be looked at.
Yeah, you know what would be a very fascinating experiment, Don, would be to record one of these commercials and separate the soundtrack from the visual content, and then play it to an audience both ways. First, the way it was designed for the TV, and then the second way is just show them a blank screen and have the verbal communication list the side effects. and see if they notice the difference. I mean, I'm sure that the people who pay for this stuff have this stuff researched intensely, and they know exactly what they're doing and how these commercials are designed. But you'd think that there'd be some countermeasures to this kind of stuff. You know, actually, we have the power, you know, to break some of these companies. What are you going to do? Stop buying their junk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And things will change, you know. But apparently, people just are so hypnotized that they can't do that. The thing that amazes me more than anything is the way they usually end the commercials. Like, they will say, yes, and in some cases can even cause death. So, consult your physician. Find out if you're right for XYZ product.
But in the meantime, sleep well, sleep nice. You know, they go back into the pitch again. It's all insanity. Well, you said psychotic. You know, watching commercials is certainly an experience in observing the psychotic methodologies used to brainwash and to propagandize through the use of neurolinguistic programming and advanced types of mind control, subliminal mind control. You know, it's all there. It's all there in that package. And they have made that their cash cow, you see. That's what supports it. So they just get insane. And it never ceases to amaze me when they say, this has not been approved by the FDA, you know. No fooling. These things, the FDA couldn't keep up with some of the names they have. You know, don't take this eye medicine because it's going to give you RLS. You know, which is the restless legs syndrome. And it may make you want to have sex with a woman that you just met. So, anyway, Jim, we are out of time. I want to give you a chance to wrap before we say goodnight to our listening audiences around the world, actually. Did we say some of what you wanted to come out tonight?
Well, I hope so. I mean, my gesture in choosing these humorous but unfortunate anecdotes was to just show the opposite end of the spectrum for the sake of those people who can't necessarily get a hook into the high-altitude stuff. I thought that maybe it would at least make sense to identify the lower strata.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they're in it, but just so that they know how to gauge, you know, their position. And, you'll probably be able to tell how we did, because you almost always get emails from people who listen.
Yeah, good and bad. Most of the time, they're very positive. I think, you know, in respect to what you just said, it's important not to take any of this for granted. Now, you know, I hope our regular listeners who are up to speed with what we're talking about, you know, the stuff that goes into the higher realms. And, you know, my research, in a way, is addressing that aspect that you talked about tonight, Jim, because I'm, although it, in a sense, it, in its, resultant truth, the truth that comes forward from really looking all at all these claims that are made. You know, we're told these stories that these people are from a certain place, or this is what they did in their life, and we're just fed this. There's no verification. You know, Reagan said, trust but verify. And we don't have to do that. You know, with them toward us, it's papers, please. You know, we have to show our papers for everything we do. But they don't. They don't have to be accountable for anything. Well, why do people play into that prearranged scenario? They're not going to win. They're not going to win. They're not going to get ahead. But you hear those people make the comment like, someday when I win the lottery, I'm going to have a lot of money, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And they don't even buy the ticket. Or in the case that they do, they think that, you know, they're going to win. Maybe that day will come, but certainly they could have accomplished a lot more by focusing their thought on something a little more real, you know, instead of all these illusions. What we're talking about is illusions. And the lower vibration people have more illusions to follow, don't they?
It certainly seems that way. I would like to understand it better, to be honest with you.
Well, you're certainly welcome to go out there in the field and study it and come back and give us a report. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I might just take you up on that.
Yeah, I think we see this every day in our lives to some extent. And but it would be good, I think, to do this on a regular basis. It would sort of be like Jay Leno's Man on the Street.
Oh, my God. That's a hilarious part of his show, actually.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's also unfortunate because it shows you...
The same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The same thing we've been talking about. Well, okay, Jim, thank you for that presentation. And I know... There'll be more to come next week. We always wait, and you know, depending on what we're talking about, we always kind of let the spiritual side of things dictate to us what we're going to say. But that was necessary to bring that out. I'm glad you were willing to do it. So. I want to thank you for being on the show. I want to wish you a wonderful weekend and look forward to your next interview.
All right, Don, thank you, and I wish you well, and I'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Okay. All right, you take care. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, scientist and inventor, Jim Murray. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for making it possible for people around the world to hear this show, as well as blogtalkradio.com. And I want to extend special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Now, I'm going to make that prayer request one more time, that we keep Don Harkins and Ingrid Castle in our prayers. Don is showing some improvement, and what has happened to him is very serious. We've already gotten to the bottom of most of it, and we have some wonderful people in the medical community helping him get well. So. Prayer is just as important as this fine medical attention he's getting. Now, you in the listening audience, I wish everyone a great weekend. We've got a whole slew of great guests coming up next week. And we are going to have, actually, Dr. A. Chu Ott back on the show starting on Monday. I had Don Harkins scheduled. I've had a couple of possible guests in mind as a replacement, and we never know. Maybe I'll do a show by myself. But Ken Adachi's coming back to Evident Footprints, Drew Raines, and on Friday, Jim Murray. So be sure to tell your friends and tune in. We're getting to the heart of a lot of matters here, and while things unfold, it's important that you keep a proper perspective. In the meantime, have a great weekend. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.